Hello, my name's Dorothy Chitty, and I'm a natural medium. Well, that's what I call myself, a natural medium, and I consider a natural medium to be somebody who has been taught directly by spirit, that it was there from childhood. When I was a little girl at school, when I first went to school, I can remember sitting on the pew in church, listening to the priest giving the Latin sermon, which I didn't understand. And this man in a brown suit used to sit next to me, and I always remember feeling it was quite rough. And he would tell me what the priest was saying, and he said it in such a beautiful way, I never felt frightened of him. And then when we'd all go back to class, and the nuns would tell us what the sermon had been about, me being me, I said, oh no, it wasn't, what he said was. And then I would repeat what I'd been told by the man in a brown suit, who I thought was God. And I got punished quite often by the nuns for presuming to think I could speak to God. It never stopped me, and I continually got smacked, but I think I was a naughty child anyhow. And children in the playground used to keep away from me because they all thought I was a little bit odd. I didn't. And I remember going out of school with him one day, and I so desperately wanted to go on the roundabout that we had in the park, which was just up the road from the school. And I went along, and this was in the centre of a city. I went along these major roads with him, holding my hand. It always felt like he was holding my hand. And I had to go on the roundabout because I was too little to get on, and he lifted me on. On the way back, there was a sweet shop, and I can remember just looking in the window on my tiptoes, just looking at all the sweets. And I was talking to him, and he was answering me. And I looked up, and he said, yes, that's right, not everybody can see me. And I just accepted that that was fine, not everybody could see him. He was my special friend. He had no reflection in the glass. And I never questioned it, I just accepted it. And he said, it's time to go back to school. And I don't know how long I'd been out, but nobody seemed to miss me, and I didn't get told off. And I never told anybody about it until I was older. I told my parents. And through school, I didn't mind being the odd one out too much. It was a little bit lonely. And they all thought I was slightly odd with this gift. My parents took me to a doctor that the school had suggested I go to. And they were talking to the doctor, and I wasn't really taking a lot of notice. I think I was asked a lot of questions. And this little boy appeared in front of his desk. And he wasn't a lot older than me. I think he was about 7, he told me. His name was Peter. And he just said, hello, I'm Peter. And I said hello to him through my mind. I always remember think-talking, what I used to call think-talking. And he told me that the doctor was his daddy and that he had died. And it never bothered me that people that had died. And he and I were having this conversation, and he said, you really need to tell him about me. And so I did. I said to him, your little boy's here. And he told me, no, he's not. Your little boy is here. No, he's not. I said, well, I know he's dead. And then he looked at me. And I said, his name's Peter. And suddenly, for the first time since I'd been in that room, this man looked at me. I know it sounds weird, but I could see the sadness in his eyes. And I don't know how long Peter had been dead. And Peter told me exactly how he died and what his father put in the coffin with him, the toy. And I realised as I got older why Peter came, And he came because they were going to start labelling me, really. And he just turned to my parents and he said, all that she's got wrong with her is ESP. I can remember skipping home with them, hand in hand, between them, and saying, so is it catching this ESP that I've got? And my father just laughed. He said, no, I hope not. And nothing else was ever said about it. So, because I said, oh, do I have to go to school then? They said, yes, you do. So I thought I'd get some time off school. So I was never a child that was ill, really. And it wasn't, of course, until I was older I understood what ESP was. I wasn't curious enough to ask at the time. I remember my father saying, it means you can talk to people and you can hear things that lots of other people can't hear. All right, okay, yes, I understand that, I thought. And then it was always there with me, and I always felt that I had the hand of God. I always felt I was holding someone's hand. And when I was about 13, I was walking home down the lane. We lived on a farm at that time. And I saw my Auntie Lottie there. Her name was Charlotte, really. And she had friends walking beside her, so I caught up with them. And I started talking to the lady on the end, and there was a man and there was a young boy. And I can't remember the others. And I was chatting away, like you do. And she said, oh, no, no, you mustn't do that. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. And I said, why not? She said, you mustn't. Can you see them all? I said, yes, of course I can. She said, well, you mustn't talk to them. Don't talk to them. She said, they'll lock you away. I've been locked away because I can talk to these people. And they don't believe me that I can see them and hear them. And so it sort of scared me a bit, and I backed off a little bit then. I kept my talk to thinking talking. And through teenage years, and you start to discover boys, you don't really want them standing next to you telling you things, so I told them to go away. And as I got older, they were just always there at times, and if I was on my own, I'd ask them a question and I'd hear an answer. If I needed help with something, they would give me help. They never helped me through school. I had to do that on my own. One thing I really could have done with help with. And I grew up, I got married, and I had children. I always felt I knew what I was going to have when I was pregnant, each time. And I used to talk to my babies in the womb. And it was long before anybody said that you should talk to babies in the womb. And so I really didn't get too involved with it. I didn't know there were such things as mediums. And then one day I was getting ready for work and they told me, your mum's going to die at 11 o'clock today. And I was really, really close to my mother. I said, don't tell me things like that. Go away. I don't want bad news, ever. Go away. And I was carrying on getting ready, and I started, just thoughts came over me. Well, I've got a black jacket. And I said, what? What's this all about? So my mother hadn't been well, but she wasn't critically ill. 11:15 that morning, I got a phone call to say that my mother had died suddenly with a pulmonary embolism. And I think I hated spirit for a while, and I can remember saying to God, how can you be a God if you've taken her away? How can you do this to me? Fancy taking her away from us. She was such a good woman, and she was a good woman. And I really shunned them, pushed them right away. And it was about 2-3 years later that I was walking down, I'd moved away from the area, and I was walking down the high street of that particular town, city where we used to live. And it's perfectly lovely. Old man came and tapped me on the shoulder. Strange enough, he was wearing a long black overcoat, dark brown overcoat, almost black. And he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "Your mum wants to talk to you." I said, "No, she doesn't." He said, "Your mum wants to talk to you." I said, "No, she doesn't." And I walked a bit further on. And he said, "Your mother really wants to talk to you." And I turned and faced him. And he was tiny. And I said, "But my mum's dead." "Oh, I know that," he said. And I turned around and walked on. He said, "I'm going where you're going." And I thought, he's following me. And he overtook me. And he walked into this side street and into this doorway, exactly where I was going. I was on a course. And he went inside there, and he then began to tell me things about my mother, what she was like, her name, everything. And I was amazed by it, absolutely amazed. And I didn't know anybody could do such things. I certainly didn't think I could. And it was such an experience that I was driving home, and he said, "Your mum said she had two wedding rings." I said, and he guessed wrongly that she'd been married twice. I said, no, she wasn't married twice. He said, "Well, she said two wedding rings." I said, okay. I said, "Oh, well, perhaps he's not right after all. Perhaps he was guessing." I was driving home that evening, and suddenly I heard my mother's voice, as clear as anything, saying, "Remember, my ring went thin." And of course Dad bought her a second one. So she did have two wedding rings, and this man was right. I never ever saw him again. I didn't even know who this man was. And I started thinking about spirit, and I came home and told my husband, and he didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to know about it. And so I just kept it to myself again. And it was started getting stronger and stronger. I kept pushing it away, and it got stronger and stronger, and I was being urged to say things to people that I didn't really want to say, but I said them anyhow. People that were friends, neighbours, and the women especially would come to me and say, "Dorothy, come on, could you just tell me?" And they said, "Oh, you're a fortune teller." I said, "No, I'm not a fortune teller. No, I can't tell your fortune." And we just laughed about it. The one thing I wouldn't do, because someone introduced me to a Ouija board and I heard the word no, and so I have never, and I saw black, and I've only seen black with spirit a few times in my whole life, and that was one of them. And so I knew that I was forbidden to ever use a Ouija board, so I never have, and I've always suggested to other people not use one. And I don't know any reasons other than I was told no, and if it's bad for me, it's going to be bad for others. So I've always kept that. And we moved to a beautiful county called Devon. And whilst I was in Devon, even though I've always loved spirit and talked to spirit, and whether it be the earth spirits, the tree spirits, the fairies, I always talked to all of them. And so I had never any doubts in my mind, but I never really discussed it with anybody either. And I was becoming, let's say, curious, but not seeking anybody. And I was at the doctor's surgery one morning, just waiting for a simple blood test, and I heard them talking about a lady that did tarot cards. And I went up and knocked on the window, and I said, "Who is this that does tarot cards?" And they were telling me, saying, "Oh, she's marvellous, and this is her number, go and see her." Well, I made an appointment, and I did go and see her. And I walked into her room, into her house, and she said, "I have been waiting 5 years for you." I asked why, and she said, "There's a gold star over your head. And they told me I would know the person I'd been asking for by a gold star." And she was a very busy lady. She saw a lot of people during the day and throughout the week. And she went on and she gave me a reading. And she said, "I want you to come back to my house this evening." I did, with my husband. She said, I want you to give me a reading now. I said, I can't do things like that. I don't do them. She said, yes, you can. She said, I want you to give me a reading. And I can remember this as clear as anything was, I heard this woman singing Knees Up Mother Brown. And it's an old-fashioned, old song, really cheerful, cheery, like a Londoner's song. And she said, oh my goodness, that's my mum. Her name was Mrs. Brown. And she always used to sing Knees Up Mrs. Brown. And I went on to tell her other things, which were private. And she said, I think you should read for other people. You need to share this gift. I said, well, I don't know how to. She said, just do what you did with me. And that was my introduction to it. That's all I ever did. And she sent me one lady, and I said, well, I won't charge. She said, yes, you will. I said, well, I can't because I'm just learning. She said, no, you will charge. And she said, charge what I charge and do what you can. Well, I thought to myself, I'll charge, but I'll probably give them the money back if I don't think it's any good. And I sat, and a lady came, rightly so. I was so nervous. I just said to Spirit, however you do this, whatever it is you do, help this lady. And help me to say the right words if they're there. But I only want to do it in truth. Well, I sat there and I gave her a reading. I didn't think it was a particularly good reading, but at the end of it she said, that was really good, thank you. It helped her. And that week I had three people come to me. And the following week it doubled or trebled, I'm not sure. It just suddenly took off. Over the time of about a month, I was absolutely full every day. Because people had just told other people. And Spirit said to me, we will teach you everything you need to know. Do not read books. We will teach you. And my main guide is called Lai Ching. And that's who I talk to. I always do in the name of God and Christ, always. I am not religious. I have absolute faith in God and Christ. I just don't have a religion anymore. Doesn't mean to say I'm against any religion. I'm not. I embrace whatever people believe in, however they need to meet their God, whatever they call their God. I think the good world would be a better place if we all accepted our spirituality. Spirituality to me is about treating others in the world, be it humans, animals, or the world itself, the way we'd like to be treated ourselves. That's true spirituality. It's not about religion. And so I grew into it. Spirit taught me everything. If I got something wrong, they would wave a finger in front of me and I would have to listen to them, and I would say to my client, I've got that wrong, I'm just being corrected. And I'd repeat what I was corrected with. And I never minded being corrected because I knew I was being taught. And Lai Ching is a Chinese philosopher, and he told me one day he would teach me his philosophy. Which he has done. And I think I lacked tact and diplomacy, because I always believed you had to speak the truth, but I didn't have tact and diplomacy, and he taught me that. And I realised through the years in my readings how they use tact and diplomacy all of the time. A way of saying something to somebody. Because isn't it true, it's not how you what you say, it's how you say it. And so they're often very loving, and well, they're always loving and caring to people. I'm not a person that picks up about tragedy too much, because I ask not to. And I don't bother with names as much these days as I used to. I always remember one time I had this lady, she was a Jewish lady. She came to me for a reading, and it was in the early days. And she so wanted her husband, Sydney, to tell me his name. And he wouldn't tell me his name, and he kept showing me. I said, are you going to Australia? Because I keep seeing the Sydney Opera House. She said, no, Australia's got nothing to do with me. And I tried to remove it. I said, no, it's wrong, you've got it wrong. They showed me again, and I saw the word Sydney Opera House. And I didn't even click his name was Sydney. I said, well, I've got Sydney Opera House. She said, no, no. She said, my husband's called Sydney. And I suddenly really realised that's how they'll teach me. It's that, oh, it's for me to look at it and think, Sydney Opera House. His name's Sydney. I said, so, and I also now know that they do it like that with a sense of humour with me now, because I've got a sense of humour. They will teach anybody that way if they do not take themselves too seriously. Each of our guides teach us differently. Everybody has got this gift. Everybody has. I also discovered that I could teach. Didn't think I could, didn't think I had anything to teach anybody. But a lady came to me one day and said, would I teach you what I did? And I said, I don't know how to. And she said, can't you do a workshop? And this was in the late 80s. And I said, I don't know, I don't even know what happens on a workshop. She said, well, you just teach people what you know. And she said, I'm sure you can get people together. I said, well, let me think about it. Well, I talked to Spirit and asked them, and they said, you will get 6 people together, and we will teach you as you go through it. I said, okay. I didn't intend charging. I rang her up and booked it all, and she said, I think you should charge this much. And I said, well, no, I can't do that, because it's all first. She said, no, you're sharing your knowledge. This is what we should all pay. And it was out of my hands, really, and they just decided they would pay it anyhow. And we had the day, and I remember asking, if this is right for them all, please let it work for them, please let it help them. And they then said, I want another one. They all wanted me to do it again, to take them on to the next stage. And those 6 women, they came from different parts of the world, those 6 women started me on the journey of teaching others, of the realisation that I did have something to share. And so that's how my workshop started, right back then in the 80s. And I taught them exactly the way I'd been taught. But the one thing they taught me whilst I was teaching them was how to meditate and how to do a guided meditation. And even to this day, my meditation tape is the basis of how I teach. It has, in the physical workshops and in the webinars, I will teach them steps beyond that, but that is my basis, always. It will never alter from that. In all of the years I've been teaching, it has been the one thing that's helped people progress into discovering who they are and their talents, what they can do, how they can be creative in their lives. It moved on in ways that, just to help people, I've always wanted to just help in whatever way. And so then I gradually moved into the area of helping people to understand what they can create in their lives, that God gives us life, but what we do with it is up to us. And so I began a one-day seminar called Celebrate Yourself. And I started it in New York, of all things. And I had it with some gay men, real lovely sweethearts of men, really lovely people. And it seemed to help people who lack self-esteem. And it was part of the basis of me helping people to grow and discover how they can build their self-esteem. Because self-esteem is how you think of yourself. Ego is how you speak of yourself. And I then went on realising that people could manifest what they wanted, because I did, so why couldn't they? It's quite a simple process, so I decided to start teaching that. And when I say I decided, it's always come from a suggestion from a client. Would you teach me? I said, yeah, I will teach you. If I feel I don't want to teach something, I will say so. But as much as I can, I will, if I think I'm capable of it. And so that's how it's evolved for me. I teach the seminars, which are one-day seminars, and I do an intensive workshop that is for spiritual development. But the others are for personal development and personal awareness and about understanding why we have what we have in our life, why things happen in our life, how we can stop them happening, and how we can create a better life for ourselves. Quite simply, there are a few little exercises, and it's all been taught to me by Spirit. It's not something I've concocted. All of it comes from Spirit. All of the teaching is my friends teaching me. I hope this helps you understand me a little bit more. I'm not a complex person. I am a straightforward person. I like things taught in a simple way. They always taught me complexity is when humans get their minds in the way. Simplicity is Spirit direct. Just remember that in your own day-to-day workings. Thank you.